Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Petrified Podcast. I'm your host, Damian Martinez, here with my co-host,
Eric Lover.
And we hope everybody's having had a great week. Today, we are talking about the movie Signs, released in 2002, directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Probably one of my favorite alien movies out there. You know, I mean, there's some great ones out there, don't get me wrong, but I think this one takes the cake for me, personally, just because of how it was shot. But before we get into it, please follow us on Instagram if you haven't yet. And, you know, continue to review us, rate us, and give us, you know, share us around, spread us. But now let's get into Signs with Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix. Which was a good casting. I liked it. I like Mel Gibson. I know he's a little crazy sometimes, but he can be kind of out there. But I think, you know, I think he does good in the stuff he's in. But, yeah, he is playing Reverend Graham Hess.
Former Reverend.
Because he, you know, he lost his faith in God after, you know, watching his wife die in an accident. And pretty much, you know, he's struggling. 6 months goes by. His brother comes and lives with him and his two children up on the farm in Pennsylvania, out in rural Pennsylvania, Buck County, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
And the movie starts off with, you know, screaming. He's sleeping and they're screaming outside, which the crickets in the beginning are a huge factor in the movie because you can hear them in the beginning of the movie. And then when they stop, he wakes up and that's when he hears the scream and then goes outside and discovers his kids in the cornfield on his farm. And there's crop circles. Well, first of all, before I even want to talk about that, the scoring of this movie was,
It was top notch. It was one of the best parts about the movie,
dude. I the intro. I mean, just like the, not even when you know they see Graham wake up. I mean, just the introduction. You know,
well, the fact that they used all the different pieces, like you know, of it was very similar to Psycho. You get kind of like that.
The birds and all that. Yeah, I mean,
the Hitchcock classics are just right there with the score.
Yeah, it was written by James Newton Howard. And it's an amazing score because it puts you in the mood of how the movie's going to be. You know, it starts off with a subtle rise, you know, in the music. And then finally, it's just, boom, it hits you. And it's just, da-na-na, da-na-na, da-na. And it's just, it keeps you on edge.
Yeah.
It always gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. Every time I start the movie, man. It just, it puts me in a good mood to watch some sci-fi stuff. But yeah, he, you know, is inspired to use old classic movies, like you said, Psycho, The Birds, inspired by those. And I mean, it did it really good because it really, really, really puts you in that mood, man. I love it. I really do love it. The movie itself, like, sets you, I don't know how to explain it. I mean, if you've seen the movie, you know that it's not your traditional sci-fi alien movie. Where it's like, oh, there's, you know, people see the lights in the sky, and then you get like this either alien invasion or the first contact, or it's more because you have the family drama, obviously. You have Graham's wife passing away in the car accident. You have Joaquin Phoenix's character,
the brother who just, you know, he's kind of looking for his place in life.
Yeah, pretty much.
He's kind of undetermined. Like, it comes into play that, you know, he used to work at the restaurant or something like that. Like, he was working somewhere part-time.
Yeah.
But he doesn't really do that anymore. Like, he's...
Yeah, he was in the minor leagues, too. He played minor league baseball, but, you know, he swung too many times and struck out. Has a high strikeout record.
He had 5 records. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I mean, 4 out of 5 ain't bad. You know?
No, yeah. So. Yeah. But, yeah, you see, you have that family drama. You see, you have Graham struggling with his faith, and you know, because he was a former reverend, after watching his wife die, he's given up faith
in God. That was one of the things that for me, like, I think you can, you know, the great part about this movie for me was you can take different things out of it.
Yeah,
like a lot of people look at it as like an alien movie, But then there's this whole loss of faith thing. So it is like a Job parable. It is the fact that, you know, it's almost like the Lord tested him. And, you know, Graham lost his faith. You know, he surrendered it because, you know, why, if there's a God, why would God take my wife from me?
Yeah.
Why would it be this way? Why would God take my children's mother? And so there's this whole, depending on your perspective, you can get like three different movies out of this one movie.
Yeah. I mean, you got your sci-fi, obviously, which is like one of the key elements. But you also have your, pretty much your, I guess, faith building.
Yeah.
Kind of storyline.
Yeah, because it does follow like Job, like even like a lot of the imagery, the crop circles and all that kind of stuff. It's all religious.
Yeah.
So it goes through and, you know, it plays on earth religions and it plays on all kinds of stuff. Because like in like paganism and such, crickets are the alarm of the forest.
Yeah.
They're the alarm signal of the forest. So when the crickets and natural, you know, living creatures of the forest are quiet, then that is a sign that there is something ominous or evil around.
Yeah, or predatory. Yeah, pretty much.
Which is,
you know, nature in itself. I mean, you go out into the woods and it gets quiet. Either something's stalking something else or something's stalking you. But yeah, man, I mean, yeah, the opening credits was what does it for me. And you get introduced to the crop circles, which were done practically. Like, there wasn't CGI. They actually cut the stalks.
Yeah, he actually wanted them to fold a certain way. So they literally did them, like, you know.
I wonder how long that took. I should have
seen. Oh, not very long. According to the movie, you can do it with a 2x4 in like 4 hours. Oh,
yeah. Like,
yeah, I mean, you know, they come out and, you know, just the nature. Like, they start off in a circular pattern.
Yeah.
The one that the children first find, you know, when they go back to reexamine it during the day, it's in a circular pattern.
Yeah.
But if you look at the ones that essentially they expand, the one essentially is in like the form of a trident. So it's kind of like water symbols. And then the circles themselves, it was said that they did the circles because, going back to the religious aspect of the film, they were saying that the circles are actually the portholes to hell. Circles are a portal to hell. And then the arrows and the tridents and everything, they go towards religious objects. So like religious establishments. So the point of the trident is headed basically directly towards the house.
Oh, yeah, because he was a reverend.
Pointing towards the house because he was a reverend. So it goes in and it's, like I said, you can watch it one way. It's like, oh, aliens making a crop circle.
And you can watch it in a symbolic way where it shows. Yeah, because, I mean, where was it at? It was in... Obviously, at his house,
you
know, on his farm. It was in India.
Yeah, it's like eight different places in India.
It was in Switzerland.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, and it's in a lot of rural areas, which are highly religious. Most of them, at least, you know, they're very, you know, whether it be, you know, paganism, different religions pretty much around the world. If you look at it that way, it's pretty crazy how...
Yeah, you know, that's like from my standpoint, like...
Whether intentionally or unintentionally, the way he did it,
Yeah, the way that he did it, that's what I liked about the movie. Like, for you, when you watch the movie, like, from our discussions before, you know, it's sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, it's the alien abduction, you know, it's the Kellysville account and all this.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, your basis for the movie is. For me, it was like having been a backslidden minister.
Oh, yeah.
It completely touched me on a whole different level because it's like... Yeah, the battling of the faith, all that, it's all right there.
Yeah.
And the fact that there was so much, you know, demonology, I mean, in the Bible, not to get too far into it, but Revelation states that, you know, they're going to come in chariots from the sky.
Yeah, and that's,
So, you know, you do get all that, and that, you know, that's what I got the most out of it was like, wow, they're like, you know, this is like a trifold movie. Like,
yeah,
you can watch it any different way you want.
So. Oh, yeah, dude. And it's also like, you know, with the kids' perspective, too, because they're struggling to understand. They don't understand what their father's going through, obviously. You know, obviously, yes, they have lost their mother. Of course, they're very young, too. But, you know, they lost their mother. And so all they see is kind of their father being kind of withdrawn from them. Like, he's very, you know, not as nurturing as he should be. they don't understand that, you know, he's one, he's lost his faith because of what happened, you know, and, you know, he's lost his wife and he's lost his faith. So it's kind of, it's a man struggling with himself. So it's kind of hard to kind of show an emotion towards your kids, especially if they kind of look like, you know, your spouse, you know, your lost spouse. Like it's a hard thing to deal with.
And I get the feeling, you know, like from watching the movie, as you go further into the movie, you start getting these father child, you know, the dogs, there are two dogs in the movie. There's Houdini and there's Isabel.
Yeah.
And Houdini, basically the two dogs are running around the crop circle. And that's how the children find the crop circle, is that the dogs have kind of, you know, gone crazy and they're running around. So when Houdini comes back into the house, he is urinating on the floor.
Yeah, because he's acting weird. You know, obviously, weird crap is going on.
Like, he's acting, you know, really, really strange. And where that kind of ties into what we were talking about like a couple seconds ago, the father looks, and this is where you can kind of tell that he's not being up front and forward with his children. The young man, Morgan.
Morgan, yeah.
So Morgan's like, oh, hey, you know, Houdini's acting weird. He peed on the floor. And so Graham's like, well, put Houdini outside.
Yeah.
Nah, nah, nah. And then he's like, I'll call the doctor later. And you're like, why is he calling, like, his son looks up to him and he's like, why are you kind of calling a medical doctor? And then it comes into play that obviously the person who's responsible for the death of the mother is the town's veterinarian, played by M. Night Shyamalan. But you can tell, like, the kids don't know that that's who...
Yeah, they just said, why are you going to call a doctor?
Yeah, why are you going to call a doctor? Like, because that's what I would say. I'd be like, why aren't you calling the vet? Well, it's because the vet, you know, Ray Reddy, played by M. Night Shyamalan, is the one responsible for the mother's death.
Yeah.
So you can tell he's not being completely up front and forward with his children. Yeah,
which is kind of hard, too. It's kind of hard to explain that, you know, they don't...
The vet fell asleep and killed your mom.
Yeah, they don't understand adult emotions. You know, they only understand, like, sad, happy, angry, stuff like that. They don't understand, like, you know, remorse and, you know, hate and stuff like that on an adult level, obviously. So it's kind of hard to explain to them. So, yeah, keeping that hidden is like, okay, you see. But kids, obviously, they are starting to resent their father. Because, or at least Morgan is, because he's a little bit older, so he has a little bit higher understanding than his sister, Bo. So he just feels like his father kind of is just not loving, that he doesn't want him or them in general. But it's not that. It's just, you know, what he's gone through and going through. Which, you know, it's very little. I mean, there's not really a lot of emotions from the kids besides, like, towards the end once stuff starts to go down.
Yeah.
That's when you start to see them fully, you know, express themselves.
Yeah, they evolve as characters, obviously, as things go in.
But yeah, so
now we've got dogs acting disturbed. We've acting weird. So circles going on.
The sheriff shows up and is, you know, Graham's telling him that it's the neighbors who did it. Which, I mean, if they did do it, how did you not hear it? You live out in rural Pennsylvania. There's no, like, cars going by. There's not, like, construction or, you know, big city noises going on. You would have heard them, like, chopping your stalks and spending time out there, or at least seen flashlights or something. Like, you're not just...
Well, remember, it's a full moon.
True.
So, if it was a full moon, and technically all that... supposedly, I don't know. I've never really investigated it. So, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Drop me a comment. Let me know. Hey, you know, this is not how it's done. But apparently, it's just simple playing with 2x4s and rope. And you go through and you mash it down and it bends the corn stalks over. And you can go in that pattern. And apparently, it's not that difficult to do.
That's probably how they did it to make the crop circle in the movie.
I mean, obviously, that's how they did it. So, you know. But apparently, it's not that difficult. But by a full moon and, you know, in country dark, it really wouldn't be too hard to get out there and, like, be navigated by it. You know, and so... If you got enough acreage, you're not, you know, even if you just have like a pony farm, like 5 acres, you're not going to know what's going on 2 acres from the house.
Yeah.
Because they're asleep at night anyways. They're, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Houdini and Isabel would be the most alert to what's going on.
True. Yeah. That's another thing too. Yeah. You think that the dogs would have went off.
I mean, you think that if there's like, you know, 4 or 5, because they keep, referencing these elusive characters who like are out there. And you know, he's calling their dad, you know, to put the you know, the fear of God in them.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, two kids did that in one night?
Yeah. Well, and the boys, yeah. Yeah. And so, like, the friends and stuff like that might have gone out there. So, like, four or five people. But even at that, I mean, yeah, the dogs would have been going off. But the sheriff is like, oh, I had to go to some skate store because some lady almost got ran over by somebody who was skating and she went and spit on all the skateboards in there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're very dismissive about all these happenings going on here. But I get it. When something weird like that happens, you want to make sense of it. You know, you want to be like, no, it's just this or it's just that. It's
some random weird thing. Yeah, that
you don't
want to
believe it's like extraterrestrial life that's come down and is making signs in your, you know,
yeah,
in your field and stuff like that. You're like, oh, it's just probably kids or it's, you know, whatever. But she goes and she talks to him and tries to make him feel better. But she also tells Graham, like, hey, you need to get out. Like, you need to take your kids, go to town, get something to eat, you know, stuff like that. And he's, you know, Morgan's very interested. He knows it's like, or he thinks it's extraterrestrials. He thinks it's like aliens and stuff like that. So when they go into town, gives him a few bucks. Graham gives him a few bucks.
Oh, he hits the bookstore. He's at one bookstore. And so he goes into the bookstore and he, like everyone now, because obviously these sightings are being recorded.
Yeah, now people
so
are
all these sightings
yeah.
And they're on the television.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because the officer gives Morgan her walkie-talkie and her radio and tells him, like, hey, if you have a baby monitor, like, it can work like that, like a walkie-talkie. It'll just be one-way walkie-talkie. It won't be, you know, two-way. And so he gets his younger sister's, Beau, her baby monitor from when she was a baby, and that's how he's been using
all he's been that using stuff. It as, like, a receiver, basically.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so he goes into town and gets, you know, a book on extraterrestrials and stuff like that.
And the bookshop scene is hilarious because the owners of the bookshop, they're like super like removed.
Yeah, they're watching the TV.
They're fixed. They're like stuck on this television and they're watching all the sightings in India and Sweden and everything. And so they're like, you know, Morgan's like, hey, do you have any, you know, books on, you know, extraterrestrials? And she's like, the old lady's like, yeah, we bought one, you know, in case any of those city folk come through.
Yeah.
You know, they have something to read. It's over there in the corner. So he goes and he finds the book. And the male counterpart owner is sitting there fixing the television. And he is, like, completely resolved to the fact that this is kind of, like, all being caused by, like, this Coca-Cola thing. Because every ad that comes on, it's been on, like, for 2 hours and it's been 15 ads for Coca-Cola or something.
Yeah.
And so they have to have something to do with it.
Yeah.
So
he's like, well, it's like 13 Coca-Cola or drink commercials
yeah,
is what it was.
Yeah, the drink ads. The drink ads are just, you know, they're, you know.
Yeah. So he takes the book and they go back home and that's when he's turning on the walkie-talkie and, you know, because the book that he was reading, you know, says that, you know, he can get, you know, the sound waves and stuff like that, get a connection with them. At first, they're very, you know, like, obviously they're like, no, it's just stupid people who, you know, want to get attention. It's nerds, as his brother says. It's nerds.
Yeah, because, you know, anything alien-related, it's got to be a nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so then when they start hearing stuff on the thing, when they get out of the vehicle, they start to be more, well, except for Graham, you know, they start to believe it. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to take the walkie-talkie, and we're just going to turn it off. And that's when his brother's like, no, you're going to lose the signal. Now he believes.
Yeah. Meryl's super easy to convince. Yeah. You know,
he was like, no, it's
like
it's
one
nerds.
Minute he's like, it's all the nerds, right? Nerds.
And then he hears the static or the sounds on the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, and it's not like it's almost like white noise. If you ever saw white noise, it like crinkles through and like it all jumbles together and makes like a discernible sound.
Yeah.
But I mean, dude, Meryl's like, he's boots on like from the minute they pull up.
Yeah. That, well, when they walk out, when they get out of the vehicle.
Yeah. That nerd's crap goes right out. And then they're like, hey, you know what? Let's get on top of the truck.
Yeah.
Get closer to the signal.
And then, you know, Morgan raises up the baby monitor and that's when you hear the talking between two aliens. And that always freaks me out, man, because it's like, dude, come on. Like, that's weird. What's also weird, too, I mean, when they're studying the crop circles when they first appear, the sheriff is talking about how animals are acting weird. They're acting very aggressive. Like, if there's a predator around, they're very on edge. They're alert. When he says that, that's when Graham realizes that his kids aren't making noise anymore. So he goes over there to see what's going on out of the field. And unfortunately, Morgan had to put Houdini down because he was going to attack.
He didn't put him down. He like straight.
He stabbed him with a.
He chicken forked that dog straight through the heart. And this is a cool thing that I saw about that scene. And we were literally just talking about that. But if you're watching that scene, it's pretty much one of the only kills you see in the entire movie. It's really.
Yeah, it's POV of the dog, pretty much, of Houdini.
Yeah.
And it's Morgan and Bo. Morgan's cooking a chicken on the grill, helping his dad out grill. And Bo is, she has a thing about water where it's like she can't finish it because it's either like contaminated or.
Yeah, something. She says like it smells funny or it tastes funny. Weird,
yeah. So she pours it in Houdini's bowl and pushes it towards him, and that's when he gets up and starts, you know.
Yeah, but remember, Morgan's talking mad trash about that. He licks his own butt like 12 hours a day.
That's probably what he heard.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, because she's like, no, this water tastes funny. And he's like, I don't think he really cares because, like, literally, like, that's what he says. He's like, he licks his own butt all day. And then Houdini
gets real aggressive.
And then next thing that you see from, you know, as obviously as Graham's talking to the sheriff, he doesn't hear his children. So he goes to find out what's going on, and he finds Houdini impaled on the chicken fork.
Yeah. Yeah, because and Bo was hiding in her little, you know, playground.
Yeah.
Because Houdini was trying to attack her.
Yeah. And if you the funny part about the playground is the roof of the playground actually has a cutout constellations in it.
Oh, yeah, that's what's weird. Yeah, that's.
So
yeah.
When you were first introduced to this movie, like her little, you know, and it will come up later in the movie.
Yeah.
So the roof has like constellation holes stencil cut out of it. So she's hiding in there, and of course, you know, Graham wants to know, hey, what happened? And as you sit there and you see, you know, basically Houdini's lifeless body there impaled on the fork, if you look to the side, you do see heat rising from the chicken. But as you learn more about the aliens, if you look on the left side of Morgan, you'll see like almost like the shutters and the paint on his left side move on the house.
Yeah, like something standing there.
Like yeah.
Blended in, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but right when the dog gets aggressive, before he kills the dog.
Yeah.
You can see, obviously, the heat from the chicken. You see, you know, it cooking. But you also, on the left side, which I didn't even notice, and I've watched this movie, and I've never noticed this, that there might be something watching them.
Yeah.
And that's why the dog gets aggressive.
Yeah, that's why Houdini is going, like, all apeso. Yeah. Because there's something going on, people. There's some signs.
Yeah. So back to the car thing. Yeah, they get, obviously, the noises and the speaking between them. And so goes off, and finally it just goes dead. Like, there's no more noise. But you start to see kind of the world unfold, but from the perspective, and that's what I love about it. It's from the perspective of this family. Whereas most sci-fi movies, it's like a whole group of people. Or it's like scientists, or it's of, you know, different other points of views of different people. And it's like a huge thing, a huge invasion, or it's like a mysterious creature, but you still see it. What I liked about this one, it's from the point of view of the family. They have their own problems going on, but they are, you know, they're seeing stuff, they're seeing it unfold before their eyes on TV. You know, and they're hearing stories of other farmers that are experiencing stuff. You know, their animals are acting weird, aggressive, and stuff like that. And then one night when they're, you know, Graham is putting up stuff, you know, and putting his kids to bed and, you know, putting their stuff away, he sees a shadow on the roof because they're upstairs.
Yep, and this is where the Kelly Hopkinsville thing, like, you know.
But, dude, that, and I'm getting chicken skin right now talking about it. Like,
yeah.
That part right there, because you don't see, obviously, you see the outline, and it's like, dude, there is something out there. Because you see, you know, you hear about the aliens, you don't see them, but you hear about them and, you know, the stuff going on around the world, and then you see the outline on the roof. And so he wakes his, wakes up Merle up and is like, hey, dude, it's them. It's the boys. It's the, you know.
Yeah, let's you know, rally around the family.
Yeah.
And you know, Merle's got plans, man.
Yeah, he's like, we're going to run out
there. He's great. He's like, you're going to run. You're going to break left. I'm going to break right. And then we're going to run around the house, and we're going to meet up, like, right at the front porch.
Yeah, we're going to meet him, and we're going to pretty much, like, confront
whip them. Whip him up. Yeah. Yeah. Like, basically, stomp
them down. Of course, Graham doesn't want to cuss or anything because he hasn't cussed at all, which is weird because he's no longer.
Yeah, because obviously Merle's got the plan. He's like, hey, let's run out there and say, like, we're going to kick your asses, and, like, we're going to, like, mess you up, and, like, we're going to beat that ass. And so, like, dude, it's funny. So Graham's like, well, you know, let me see. Well, I can't curse. But, like, and Merle's like, dude, don't be like a chicken shit. Just come on.
Yeah, we just got to sound aggressive.
Yeah, we got to sound aggressive. Like, you got to sound like you're angry.
Yeah, so he goes out there, and, of course, Merle's going off.
He's Which is funny because, like, you kind of, I mean, it's one of those moments where you can't separate the character from the actor.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like, dude, we all know Mel Gibson be dropping huge hate-filled F-bombs all day, but he breaks and he's like, I'm very angry. It's like some 40-year-old virgin stuff.
I'm insane with madness.
Yeah, it's just, it's horrible.
And then finally when the porch lights start going off and they start seeing the shadows of these things, that's when he starts like, we're going to whoop your ass. And then that's when Graham finally cusses. But they meet back and they do full circle and there's nobody there.
Nobody in the middle.
And then there's, you know, footsteps on the roof. And Merrill's like, dude,
how'd they get up there? It's like it's a 10-foot roof. It's a 10-foot awning.
Yeah. And they're looking on the roof, and then finally there's like motion behind them, you know, where the field's at, where the cornfield's at, and you just see the swing moving from her playset and just like rustling in the cornfield. And it's like, okay, well, two, either something jumped over them or
There were multiple somethings that you couldn't see.
Yeah, and they went around them, so they wouldn't be noticed. And, yeah, it's just wild. But Morgan, you know, the next day, Morgan's talking about the aliens and stuff and how it's going to be very, like, strategic. Like, it's going to be, like, military, you know, where you have, you know, them looking out for you. Or that's when Merrill goes to the recruiting office and pretty much the recruiter there is talking about how they're like, it's like recon pretty much. Like you're going to have like three or four guys go out or two or three guys go out and do recon on the place, you know, check it out, you know, before you bring in the cavalry to either invade or stuff like that. And at first Merle's like, dude, this dude's a whack job. Like,
yeah.
But you know, you find out that's where you see the other guy, the actual brother, Lyle. And the brother to the farmer who Graham thought was the one.
Yeah, the one responsible for everything, yeah.
But he kind of looks dopey himself, and he's like, oh, yeah, he, you know, calls out Merrill because the recruiter's like, dude, you know, you're the guy who.
Oh, yeah, dude, he's stroking him off on the fact that, you know, he's got these
five. You had the longest home run ever.
Yeah.
And five trophies for it. And then that's when Lyle's like, yeah, he also has the strikeout record where, you know, he's been struck out so many times and. Recruiter's like, is that true, man? And he's like,
yep.
I just felt bad not to swing. But he also bucks at, at Lyle and he flinches. But finally, like, Graham's like, dude, like, this is too much. Like, you know, there's a lot of talk of aliens. We need to just relax, not watch any TV. Like, we just need to chill out. And they have dinner and all that. And Graham goes to take the water out to the dog because, you know, Isabel is now tied up on the shed because she, you know, we don't know what's going on with this one.
Yeah, exactly. Houdini tried to, you know,
mess around.
He got chicken fork stuff.
Yeah. And so he goes out to give her the bowl of water and she's barking at the field. I mean, she's going off and she tries to attack Graham too. So Graham's like, look, let's, you know, if it's nerds or whatever, like Merrill said, it's time to put this to the end. Like, no one's going to be on my property. No one's going to get famous from this. So he takes a flashlight, goes out into the field, to the crop circle, which is also an eerie feeling because it's just him standing there with a big old crop circle. And I'm like, ah, dude, that's an odd way, you know, odd feeling. And he pretty much yells out to whoever's out there is like, you're not going to get famous. Like, there's no reason for you to be doing this. Like, if you just leave now, like, we won't bring it up. Just you go home. Like, you're not going to gain anything from this. And so he goes out back into the field, and he's walking around, and he hears stuff, you know, rustling in the cornfield. And right behind him is just the chatter that he heard on the walkie-talkie. And he freaks out, drops the flashlight, goes off. And he picks it up, and when he points it down the row,
you just see this, like,
the grayish leg.
Yeah. See, the grayish leg is what freaked me out.
You see, just yeah, it's weird.
The fact that, like, all of your worst fears have just been confirmed in one, like, fell swoop.
Yeah.
Like, that's what got me, like, when I had first seen this movie. It was like, man, that's some creepy stuff. Because, like you said, it set the whole environment.
Yeah.
It was everything. It was like the, you know, the crop circle, the being out there in the middle of nowhere. The fact that you're kind of lulled into the sense of, oh, okay, well, all is well now because, you know, whatever it was, you called it out. You told it, you know, just step. You're not going to get it. But then, literally, like, the fumbling, the leg right there. It was just,
Yeah, man, because, well, not only that, okay, he hears the on the walkie-talkie, the chatter. Doesn't believe it. He just thinks it's, like, picking up another baby monitor or something like that.
Yeah, because babies are chattering, like, yeah. Talking to each other.
But that's the thing, is he hears the chatter, the same chatter that he hears from the baby monitor. He hears it right behind him. And then when he points the flashlight up, that's when he sees the grayish leg, the non-human leg. And then when he goes back inside, obviously the kids and his brother see that he's kind of distraught. He's like out of it. And he finally says, okay, you know, I believe you. I'm not going to tell you what I saw, but I believe you. Let's watch the TV. And so pretty much they stay up all night watching the
news. They binge watch the hell out of it. So.
Dude. I mean, at that point, it's something that it's like so big. It's going around worldwide, you know.
So it's got a lot of the Phoenix lights, like the 1997 Phoenix lights recordings, where there's multiple like glowing discs hovering above like well-populated areas.
Yeah.
Whereas before, with you know the first original inceptions of the signs, they're rural. They're not near bodies of water.
Yeah.
They're just you know, but there's no real presence.
Yeah.
Now it's like they're, you know, wanting to be known.
Yeah, they're wanting to be known now.
So, like, yeah, so there are like multiple glowing discs above, you know, large metropolitan areas. So, obviously, now.
It's... Marilyn and Graham have this moment where, obviously, they're talking about faith and belief and all that. Because Meryl is scared. And his brother is all he has to kind of bring him down, you know, hold him down. Like, hey, man, like, it's going to be all right. But, of course, Graham is now, you know, losing his faith and seeing his wife die. He's just like, dude.
He's like a mortal man now. Because, we as a society look to, you know.
Higher presence, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, you know, men and women of the cloth, we look to them for, you know, comfort and solace in our times of desperation.
Yeah. And so he's trying to, you know, go to his brother for comfort. And his brother's like, he's like, no. He's like, dude, he goes, it could be the end, like. Pretty much. And Merrill's like, dude, like, thanks a lot. Like,
yeah.
He goes, I just want you to comfort me. Like, just be there. So finally, Graham tells him, he goes, hey, like, there's two different people in the world. Those who have faith at first he says those who don't believe in anything, who just see outcomes such as that, just as pure luck or bad luck or good luck. And there's no, you know, coincidence. There's only coincidence. There's no reason for things, pretty much.
Yeah, there's no laid out plan.
You know, stuff just happens just because it happens. And then and those people deep down inside, when they see those lights, even though they don't believe in anything, they have fear. And the other people who do believe that there is a path for everybody who, you know, believe that things happen for a reason, that there is no coincidence, that those people, when they see those lights, they see, you know, they have hope, pretty much. And he's like, so where do you fall in those people? And he's like, well, I see them as a miracle. And so he has hope. He goes, good. He goes, he's like, all right, good.
Say no more.
Yeah. Oh. And Merrill's like, well, what about you? He goes, why does it matter? He goes, do you feel comforted? It's like, well, yeah. He goes, then that's all you needed, man. Like,
done my job.
I did your job. Oh. But then Merrill's like, no, come on, man. Like, what is it? Like, Merrill should have just shut up right there. But you also get the... What makes this movie great is Graham pretty much lays out that he doesn't believe in anything anymore. that there's no one, like, they're alone on this earth. That's it. Or they're alone on this, not on this earth, obviously, because there's lights in the sky. And yeah. There's obviously extraterrestrials.
Yeah, basically, there's nothing else out there. It's like they're...
No,
like,
one's there,
like,
for them.
Faith-wise, yeah.
Yeah, that they're on their own.
Like, you're just on this path that essentially can, you know...
Yeah.
Take you either way, but he's just...
He's done, yeah. They're all alone, pretty much. No one's going to save them. And that's... pretty much how, you know, it sits. But it's a good moment because you, as the movie progresses, you see that there was reason for everything. So pretty much stuff starts to, around the world, stuff starts to go off. Graham gets a call from the vet. I forget his name, but he's played by M. Night Shyamalan.
Ray Ruddy.
Yeah, he gets a call from him. But you hear on the phone, it's him. He's like, you know... father, and you hear motion in the background and you hear the little chatter on the phone.
Yeah, you hear like the alien speech.
Yeah.
And this was probably like Ray Reddy, the veterinarian, it was probably the most confusing, like least determined character out of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand this. So he goes over to the veterinarian's office.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird because there's kind of this going back and forth that both of them have kind of felt like, hey, I've wanted to talk to you for a while. But, you know, we're just, you know, I'm still hurt, and there's all this weirdness.
Yeah, because he's like, I wanted to apologize. It's probably because, like, he wanted to give Graham closure and apologize to him, but it's just, which I understand.
Dude, I don't know how you do that. Like, yeah, if I killed your wife
and if you don't know what we're talking about, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie yet, like, pretty much he ran over his role. No, not ran over his wife, but he hit his wife.
Yeah, he wedged his wife in between a tree and his car.
Yeah. Because he fell asleep.
Yeah.
He wasn't inebriated or anything. No. He just had a long day and...
mistakes happen. She was out for a walk before dinner and...
But he also brings the same point up that Graham and Meryl were talking about. He goes, I could have fallen asleep 5 minutes before.
And then what would have happened was I would have woken up in a ditch.
Yeah. He goes, I just would have had a headache and, you know...
So it shows like the predetermined nature of the way that things work.
He goes, but for some reason at that moment, he fell asleep and ended up hitting her. He could have fell asleep. Yeah. Like he says, he could have fell asleep 5 minutes before or after he passed her. But instead at that moment, he nodded off and he hit her. But he does apologize to Graham. Graham notices that he has all of his stuff packed up. Like, he's hightailing it out of here. And he tells him, like, dude, well, these things, if they are going to come and down, you know, I'm going to go to a lake. I mean, at least, you know, enjoy the rest of, you know.
See, and that's the whole thing. He's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm going to go to the lake because they don't seem to appear anywhere near water.
Yeah.
Is what he says. And it's like he looks like he's ready to go, but then he's like half-assed through making dinner. Like, there's fresh, you know, yellow squash cut up on the cutting board.
Well, remember, he says he caught one of them in this pantry.
Yeah. And that's when he's leaving. He's like, oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, you know, after, you know, he's taking off. He's like, oh, by the way, you know, if you go in my house, don't
open the pantry.
Don't open the pantry. I trapped one of them in there.
Yeah.
So where do you think Graham's going to go with that one?
Yeah, because he's wounded.
He
has a wound, but
Ray has a wound in his side,
but he takes off. And so Graham, obviously, you know, you can't just tell me that and expect...
you piqued his curiosity at this point.
So he goes in there and he hears somebody behind the door. You can see the shadow in the pantry, you know, moving back and forth. And so Graham's like, again, he's trying to, you know, rationalize it.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, the police are here, you know.
Yeah, he's doing his best, you know, his best.
Act like a cop.
It's still the damn neighbor kids.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm the police. He goes, if you just tell us who's all involved in this, you know, crop circle stuff, you know, we'll let you and give you the same deal that we gave your friends, pretty much. And he says, we'll take you down in the paddy wagon.
Yeah. he's talking like the Keystone Cops or something. Like, he's in like 1923.
Yeah. But even he's like, why would I say that?
Who the hell would say paddy wagon? But yeah.
But he's curious. And so he gets the knife that, you know, he was using to cut up his vegetables. And he's like, well, let me. That's very reflective, by the way. He's like, well, let me see
what's... Yeah, that is one clean-ass mirror fresh knife. Yeah. I'm just saying that much on that one.
So he sticks the knife under the pantry, and he's looking around, doesn't see anything. sticks it closer, still doesn't see anything. Well, at least he doesn't see anything from his perspective. Because we later find out, you know, these things can disguise themselves.
They're like chameleons, basically. Yeah. They
so he could have been staring right at it.
Yeah.
And, it could have just been blending in. But he's like, man, this is ridiculous. There's... Let the freaking whatever cops or whatever come and get him. So he just puts the knife up, walks away, but he's like, nah, there's something in there. I know there's something in there. I can feel it. And so he goes back, sticks the knife under there, and that's when the claw pretty much comes out from under the door to try to grab him. And that is like the most, I mean, just tense moment, like high moment of the movie, because now you are getting an actual interaction between them. You're not just seeing the silhouette, you know, on the rooftop. You're not getting the, you know, leg, you know, for a second. You're getting, you know, an actual attack. And it's just the hand, but still, it's like...
Yeah, it's still like an alien transmorphed hand.
Yeah, so this thing's trying to grab at him, and he gets the knife and cuts its finger off. And when he goes back home, he's like... Pretty much he's going to prep up. You know, he's going to take him to the lake is what he wants to take his family to the lake because, I mean, at that point, if the world's going to end, at least one, be somewhere nice. And if you don't see that the crop circles are anywhere near water, I mean, take a chance, you know?
Yeah, it's a toss of the dice.
But, you know, his boy, Morgan, and freaking Meryl have been reading this book too much.
Yeah, and so they're sitting on the couch
with tinfoil on their heads
with Bo in the middle, and they've all got like tinfoil hats, you know, that come to a point.
And Bo has been having dreams of kind of what is gonna go, is not really like huge like premonitions or anything like that, but she's like, I dreamt about this. Or and she tells Morgan, you know, promise you won't die. Morgan's like, who says I'm going to die? Like, and it's because she's been dreaming stuff up. Like, she's been dreaming about...
Yeah, she's been having visions.
Yeah.
Which, once again, pulls into the whole biblical standpoint.
Yeah.
The whole, you know, faith-based that this movie can turn.
It is,
The weird part is, if you do the correlation between what has happening to Bo and what is happening to Graham has the same dream every night.
Yeah.
He gets shocked by that same dream every single night.
Yeah, where he meets up his wife.
Where
he's talking to his wife, pretty much, where she's, you know.
In her final moments.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has the same dream every night, and he awakes from it, basically, like, out of breath, like a panic attack.
Yeah.
And now his daughter is, like, basically exhibiting the same signs.
Yeah.
She has the dreams where, you know, her brother's passing away.
Yeah.
And all that. So it's weird because now it's getting down to the point where
stuff is trying to,
it's more signs upon signs.
Yeah. So. Hence the movie.
Yeah.
but he wants to take his family, obviously, to the lake. And so they vote for it. They have like an argument, pretty much, him and Morgan. And he's like, no, he goes, let's just stay here. But Bo wants to stay home too. The only reason she wanted to go is because, you know, she just wanted to be, you know.
Yeah, and Graham's vote counts for two, right?
Yeah, because he's talking for two parents. Yeah. But they decide to stay home. And they decide, well, you know, we're going to board up the house, and we're going to pretty much hold down the fort here. Like, if they're going to come, they're going to have to earn it. Like, they're not just going to take us.
Yeah.
You know, because they were talking about what was going to go on, like what's going to happen. And he's like, well, it's either they come in contact and they're curious about us and they want to study us and they're peaceful, or they're gonna hostile.
Come violently. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when Graham's like, well, I just met one at the vet's office and it seemed pretty hostile. Like, it wanted to harm me. So they decide, okay, well, we're just going to hold it down here. And so they board up all the,
They boarded up the house, and you know, they tell Morgan to secure.
Dude, we're forgetting about the biggest moment in this movie.
When they're watching the television.
Where Meryl's watching the television, and...
So Meryl, due to the fact that obviously Morgan has been, like,
Morgan and Bo have been...
He moves, Meryl decides, being a good uncle that he is, I'm not going to scare the piss out of the kids. I'm going to move the television into, like, the broom closet.
Yeah, and I'm going to be glued to it.
Yeah, so he's glued to it, but, you know, once again...
And he's talking about how, you know, it was like over Mexico City that a bird was flying and it hit something in the air and it falls straight down.
Yeah, there's nothing in the air. It's like completely like disguised. It's like Wonder Woman's invisible jet.
Yeah, but it hits an invisible wall. It hits
an object and then basically falls to the ground dead.
Yeah, and when they find the bird, its neck was broken.
Yeah.
And so they're like, you know, maybe it's something right there. But the biggest moment is they show a video of... This is like when everything starts to kind of go down. They show a video of like a party, a birthday party in Mexico. And it's pretty much, you know, handheld camera footage. And there's like a party and you can see bushes and stuff like that. Meryl's like, dude, like, what's going on? Like, I got to see, like, there's too many kids, like, move.
Yeah, get out of the way. Like, they can hear him through the TV.
Yeah, and pretty much the kid's saying it's behind, like, the garage and all of that. And
that's exactly what they keep repeating over and over again. Yeah. Is that it's behind the garage.
And finally, when they point it down outside, the freaking alien walks across. And this is when you get the full-scale alien. And it walks across the screen. And that is, like, the biggest moment in this movie because you see the full alien, you know, you get the, you know, obviously the attack and all that, but now you get the full view, the full Monty pretty much. And do that. I've seen comments already, but me personally, that has been like the scariest part in this whole movie. Probably one of the biggest, scariest moments that I've seen in horror movies.
Yeah. But it's also because of how they're setting it up.
It's set up so well, you've got
Meryl just, you know, like, the kids are running around, and Meryl's, like, just excited as a damn kid.
Yeah.
You know, get out of the way. And he's, like, yelling at him. And then, literally, like, you see, like, the weird part is right before the full exposure.
Yeah.
You see, like, a little, like, waft in the bottom. It's almost like some leaves move. If you watch it like, the leaves kind of move. And then, all of a sudden, it's, like, it kind of, like, backed up to project itself forward. And then all of a sudden you get this tiny little movement if you play it slow, and then it like floods the whole screen, and then the alien's there.
Yeah.
And of course it's camouflaged. You know, it's taken on
it's blended from the bushes. Yeah.
It's blended with the leaf pattern. So it looks like just this like foliage
green
alien.
Yeah.
Like coming out, you know. I found the leg in the cornfield like way scarier.
Yeah.
Just because of, you know, it wasn't in the middle of the day.
Yeah, true.
I think it's scarier. That had some, you know.
Yeah, it is scarier. I think for me, it just seeing that full...
Oh, yeah, the thing just emerges, like, yeah.
Oh, dude, that was such peak, like, reveal. So you get that, and then, so they finally decide to board up the house. Like, okay, if they're going to come, you know, let's do this.
So, of course, you know, Morgan is told to go secure, you know, our good old friend Isabel.
Yeah, well, she was supposed to go in the garage.
The last surviving dog. That's what he was supposed to do. He was supposed to let dog... Obviously, from my sarcasm and everything, as you can read, he forgets to do it.
Yeah, he's supposed to bring the dog in, but they were like, oh, we'll do it after dinner.
Yeah.
So they board up the house, and they're like, you know, hey, what do y'all want for dinner? Yeah. Pretty much, Grandma's setting up, like, their last meal.
Yeah, it's our final supper. What does everyone want?
So they give out their meals of what they want, and he's like, dude, perfect. We'll cook it all up. No one's going to do the dishes, because if we die, like,
who the hell cares? Yeah.
So they're having this moment. No one's eating. And Graham's like, you know, hey, look, we made all this good food, like, eat, you know, pretty much. Morgan wants to say a prayer. And Graham's like, no, I'm not wasting another moment of my, you know, if I'm going to die, I'm not wasting it on prayer. Obviously, because your mom was killed and I was a reverend, like, I'm not praying anymore. So that's when they have, like, this giant argument and...
French toast gets stolen.
Yeah, he starts, like, stuffing his mouth and breaking down. And I think that's when Morgan realizes that his dad is kind of going through it. Like, his dad is, like, in shambles pretty much. You know, how does a man who pretty much his whole life was based on faith loses someone who he loved so much and loses faith pretty much? It's like, and it might not be that complex in his head, but he sees that his...
I think I would have noticed when there were, like, 8 crosses on the wall. As they walk through the house throughout the entire movie, you see, like, places where crosses used to be.
Yeah, it used to be.
I think that would have been my first, like, reveal that maybe dad is giving up the ghost. Because, literally, there's just cross marks all over the wall.
Yeah. And so that's when Morgan finally hugs his dad. He pulls in Bo, and he grabs Meryl and pulls him in. And they have this moment, you know. And so finally, you know, that's when, you know, the dog's barking. You know, they the baby monitor goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's like, okay, they're coming. Like, this is it. This is the big moment. It's time to, you know, make sure that we do not get attacked or taken or anything like that. So they go into the living room and, oh man, it's just such a good moment because, like, the crickets die. Again, you hear the crickets and then they die. You hear the dog barking. That's it. Even the wind is kind of calming down a little bit. And that's when, unfortunately,
you hear Isabel.
Isabel
perish because dumb Morgan did not take her into the... They forgot, I mean, she probably would have perished anyways because the aliens probably would have come in and
got her. Yeah, not only that, dude, with the way... If Houdini acted the way he did, I mean, he probably would have turned against the family just trying to get away from them. You know, usually stuff like that, they're not trying to attack the family because they're trying to hurt them. It's just like, hey, dude, you're keeping me here, and I'm trying to get away from
them. I'm sorry, dude. I'm ghetto, dude. I would have run an eyebolt. Like, you're messing up your house anyways, nailing everything.
Yeah.
I would have run an eyebolt, like a big, like, you know, like quarter inch, half inch eyebolt into the banister, locked the dog up, put the dog at the base of the stairs, and then gone upstairs. Because the dog wouldn't have been able to get away from that eyebolt.
Yeah.
And at least, you know, hit your ass, Mr. Alien.
Yeah, pretty much like the dog would attack.
Yeah, you would know, like, exactly at that moment when it got there.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, but so they kill the dog. Because the dog does attack him. You can hear it
fight. Yeah, you can hear a fight.
And, unfortunately, Isabel loses. Which, in my opinion, I would have just let the dog go. I would have just unchained him. And, I mean, because the only thing she barked at was when the aliens were there. So if they weren't there at that moment because they were gone, they've done their recon, it's time to get the cavalry and start harvesting these people.
I would have taken the dog to the vet. Because that dude knew what was going on. I'm just saying. I'm like,
yeah.
Hey there, Ray. Why don't you take my dog out to the lake?
Yeah.
You know?
But unfortunately, yeah. They didn't. They're trying to get in. They're trying to figure out a way to get in. You can hear them banging on the walls and stuff like that. And so finally they're like, you know, Graham's trying to, you know, tell them stories, you know, about their childhood, about their birth, you know, when their moms had them, which was M. Night Shyamalan's kids' stories,
like, yeah,
that he would tell his kids, or about his kids' birth, pretty much. And so he's like talking about them, and Merle's like, hey, man, they're trying to get in, like... They're in the rooms now, but the rooms are boarded up, so they can't get in. And so they're like, okay, well, they're trying to figure out a way to get in, you know. And finally, they forget that the attic wasn't boarded up. So now they're gonna get through from the attic. So it's like, okay, well, we're gonna hide in the basement, like.
Yeah, we're gonna get the farthest away from them that we possibly can in this lockdown
because we forgot to board up the attic.
Yeah,
so let's get out of here. And when they're dragging them, that's when you see the fingers come up from the front door, trying to get in. So they go down in the attic, and he's like, "Well, you know, we gotta, you know, make sure barricade ourselves, keep ourselves safe, at least survive the night." Of course, Graham thinks they're not going to survive, that they're going to either die or get taken or something like that. Like, something's going to happen to him. Merrill is high hopes. He's like, no, we're going to survive this.
Yeah, Merrill's got faith.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't lose his faith, so yeah. He's, you know, he's kind of determined. So
yeah, he's George Michael's on the, because you got to have
faith. Absolutely. Maybe Limp Bizkit.
Maybe.
So they all go down into the basement, and they're like, dude, we're going to, like, this is where we're going to make our final stand.
Yeah.
So they go down into the basement, and they're just basically, like, barricading.
And this is a good part, too, because now they're banging against the door, right? And Morgan's like, well, we need our tinfoil hats because they're going to read our minds. Like,
yeah.
And it's so weird because when he says that, Graham looks at the doorknob, you know, because he's like, the whole thing when they're barricading, they're like, we don't have to knock off the handles or anything like that because they don't know how to open doors, right? That's the whole thing, is they don't know how to open doors because, you know, he could have, the alien at the...
I mean, you got proof. You got the pantry
he could have opened
Ray's house. He could have
he could have opened the door, and he didn't, you know. So he's like, oh, they can't open it. But the minute that Graham in the basement looks at the doorknob, it starts moving.
Yeah.
And it's like...
Tinfoil hat denied.
Yeah.
Like, if you would have had a tinfoil hat, you would have been able to, like, cut that out.
Yeah, but. Because he's like, he looks at the doorknob, and it's like, oh, dude, can they read minds? Because...
I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
So they get a pretty much, it's like a pickaxe or something, and they jam it up against the door because Grandma's not ready to go. He's not ready to die. So he's like one final stand, and lights get knocked out because Meryl hits the light bulb with the with the thing. And so they're having pretty much their last stand. And he's they notice that they're not trying to get in anymore. They're just making noises. They're trying to distract them pretty much and try to find a way in. And he's like, oh, well, they used to dump coal down into this basement, so let's look for the opening and try to barricade that because they're not going to come in. They go all around the room, and they meet at where Morgan is standing in front of the grate, pretty much where they would dump
the coal chute.
And that's when that freaking hand comes up and grabs
it. It's like a great dude. And that to me was just also like a great, you know.
Yeah, that's a great, like.
It was a great scene. And the fact that it kind of pulled everything together, like with the start, with, you know, the fact that the movie was kind of based on the Kelly Hopkinsville accountings that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, they were coal mines.
And
the coal crate, you know, like the coal chute.
Yeah.
Is where the alien comes in. So it was actually pretty cool done. But, I mean, the fact that, you know, you see the hand and you see it, like, just.
It's blended in with the grate.
Yeah, it's completely blended in with it. Yeah, it's like it just comes to life and just, you know, goes out and grabs. Yeah. And
so, yeah, they barricade the doorway pretty much, or the entryway with big old bags of dog food.
Yeah.
And Morgan being asmatic, because he is asmatic through the whole film. I mean, he didn't just, like, appear asthmatic.
Yeah. He got asthma when the alien touched him.
No, but
if you have asthma,
he's
yourself.
Having an asthma attack.
Yeah.
You know, obviously with the freaking alien touching your face.
The dust, the fear. I mean, also, it's a coal, you know.
Yeah.
There's probably residual coal. You're in a freaking basement.
Yeah, and so Graham is holding him. He's trying to calm him down and get him through the attack. And Meryl is watching him. Meryl is praying. If you see, like, his mouth move, he's, like, praying. It looks like he's praying, at least. But he notices that his brother is, like, has hate and anger in his eyes. And pretty much Graham is telling God, like, you can't take another one from me. Like, you can't do this again. And he's like, I hate you. And he's just like,
there's a lot of anger there. Yeah.
And so then he finally, Morgan gets through it and he's calmed down and he's still, you know, obviously sick, but, you know, he's not as bad. He's not having an attack anymore. So the next day.
That was very well done also. Yeah, like, man, if you watch it, like, it's something that in a moment of panic you would do.
Yeah.
Like if you were holding your child or you were holding your dog and you were kind of like trying to resuscitate it and you were like the fact that he's telling his son to breathe as he breathes.
Yeah.
Like when I take a breath in, you know, you breathe. And it's like it kind of shows like desperation.
Yeah.
It's desperation and hopelessness. And I thought that was, like, extremely fucking well done.
Because he's not going to turn to God because God's already taken somebody from him. Or that he feels like has taken somebody from
him. But if you look at it, it's like, dude, from a Christianity standpoint, it's the breath of life.
Yeah.
Like, basically, that is Christ. So you are taking. So once again, like I said, there's all these different dynamics.
Yeah, elements, yeah.
That you can work in, like, to watch the movie either way.
Yeah. And then finally, Meryl's like, look, let's turn off the lights. It's time to just knock out, and hopefully we just survive the night. That's when Graham has the dream, you know, of his wife. He finally, you know, it shows you what actually the full of what happened and that he was talking to his wife and that, you know, she says everything, you know, about the kids, about him, about Meryl to swing away, you know. And Graham just, he just accounts that as like, dude, well, her nerve endings were done. And
she was like hallucinating.
She was like, her mind went back to like a baseball game that we went to of yours, Meryl. Like, it wasn't real. And so she says all this stuff and finally they wake up and the radio's back on because everything was already off. TV was off. Radio was off. Like, everything was cut because pretty much the world was ending. But now the radio's on, and the guy on the radio was talking about how they just left. They're gone. Like in a moment they were here, and now it's like they ran away from something. Like they were scared of something. And so Meryl's like, hey, I found some spare light bulbs, because he turned on the lights, and he's like, and I think they're gone now. He goes, like, there's none to be found. Like, apparently on the radio, they left.
They left Pittsburgh. Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was saying, he goes, from what the guy's saying, he goes, they left in a hurry because they left their wounded behind. Like, they didn't even take their injured. And he goes, so we fought back, and it looks like we won. And he goes, okay. He goes, well, we need to get Morgan's medicine, so we need to figure out, make sure that there's none in this house, and go. But before that, Meryl was like, dude, he goes, I saw your eyes last night. He goes, I can take a lot of things. He goes, but I don't ever want to see that look again in your eyes. Like, we have to do better for your kids, pretty much, is what he's saying. You know, try to give them faith. So they go to check the house, and there's no sign. Well, he doesn't even go and check the house. He just, like, walks upstairs.
And then that's what I thought was kind of cool about it is, like I was saying, with the roof to the playhouse.
Yeah.
They open it up. They're coming out of the basement. And as you escalate up towards the stairs, you see, like, the morning sun.
Yeah.
Bright as can be in the house. And it's illuminating every, like, constellation from the roof, because they've used a piece of the playhouse.
Oh, yeah. Used the playhouse.
Which was funny, because they used the one side of it, but they didn't use the other one.
Yeah.
But long story short, they've used it to basically board up a window.
Yeah.
So, you know, Meryl goes upstairs and literally, like, oh, hey, it's all clear.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, dingbat. They're freaking camouflaged on that. So, like, it's a good assumption. It's all clear.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to see it. I want to look back. I don't know if it's even put into the movie, but I want to look back and see if the alien was hiding in the living room. Because, so they go and they lay Morgan down. And Bo turns on the TV. And she's like, hey, she tells her dad, like, hey, they're celebrating on TV. They're dancing and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're doing like some kind of hoochie coochie dance. Yeah, it was weird.
And so Graham asks Morgan, "Hey, do you want to watch that? You know, till I get your medicine and all that." He's like, "Yeah." So he rolls the TV out of the closet, and in the dark screen, you see the alien holding Morgan. Yeah, you see the
reflection.
And
you know what? That's actually brought a very good point. What I thought about that was maybe one of the other reasons that they don't like water, they hate water, is because the water casts the reflection.
Oh yeah, that too.
Because I'm definitely not going to get into it on this episode, but I definitely had a very major encounter years ago that literally mirrors that same exact thing that I said. So,
that'll be a future episode when we talk about extraterrestrials.
Absolutely, and stuff. Yeah. This will not be a subject we do not revisit. But yeah. I was wondering about that because you could see it in there. And then, obviously, they wheel the television out to turn it on.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's discovered that.
Yeah, because on the TV, it was talking about how in India they used a very primitive method to fight them off, and that's how they won. It doesn't say how they won. It just says very primitive method. That's it. When he rolls the TV in, that's when you see the alien in the reflection holding Morgan. And when they turn around, you see pretty much the skin and how it works, how it's kind of camouflaging with stuff. It's holding Morgan, and you see the pattern of his shirt on the skin of the alien. So that's how it uses it. You see Meryl and Graham's face on the alien on its backside because it's facing them.
Yeah, so it's just reflecting.
So. Yeah, and so it looks transparent even though it's just camouflaging with its environment. And you look at the hand, and it's the same hand from the alien in the pantry.
It's missing two fingers.
Yep, it's missing two fingers. So it's this thing stayed around because it wasn't wounded. Besides its two fingers cut off, it wasn't wounded. And another thing was on the radio, it was talking about how it was spraying people with chemical from them. They have gas that they were spraying them with. And pretty much they weren't there to attack. They weren't there to make peace. They were there to harvest the people. I guess as workers for their planet. And so it has like the little
nuts. It has a little projectile down like at the base, almost like a little Spider-Man.
Yeah, type like kind of thing. Yeah. And it's faced up against Morgan's nose. And it's so weird though that out of all of, and it could just be because Morgan was sick on the couch, but it chose Morgan. Like it could have grabbed Bo.
It's faith, man. It's faith.
Yeah, but it grabbed Morgan. Morgan being the asthmatic one.
Yeah.
And it's using gas to kind of capture people. So pretty much it wasn't going to harvest Morgan. It was going to kill Morgan. It's like, dude, you chopped off my fingers. Like,
yeah,
I'm taking your kid. Like,
yeah, this is revenge.
Yeah. And that's when he gets the flashback to his wife saying, swing away, and saying, you know, back to, you know, him and Meryl talking on the couch about, you know, people who believe that there's no coincidences, that things happen for a reason. And at first he didn't believe, you know, he thought his wife died just because she died. It was just, you know, bad luck pretty much. Like, oh, she just happened to be in that same spot when he fell asleep and she died.
Yeah, wrong place, wrong time.
Yeah. But now he's looking back at it and he's like, oh, she died for a reason. Like, she died at that exact moment to tell me, swing away.
And she had the vision, yeah, like Graham had and like Bo had.
Yeah.
Had like the dreaming vision of swing away.
Yeah.
So bam, he looks right towards Meryl. He's like,
and the bat on the wall.
Yeah,
and
the bat's on the wall, yeah. And he's like, swing away.
And that's when Meryl grabs the bat, and
Meryl picks up on it like rather quickly. Like, yeah. It just, you know, it just automatically clicks in his head that this is what you do.
Yeah, because he had told Meryl on the couch what she had said, and he just said that's why he tells Meryl, like, dude, it was just her nerve endings were cut off, and she was having a memory of your games, and she just told me to tell you to swing away. But in reality, that's when both of them kind of click, like, oh, this is what she was talking about. Like, there's no coincidences. Like, this is what it, you know, this is what's supposed to happen. So he grabs the bat, and that's when the alien's like, oh, you're going to grab a weapon, so let's get down. So he sprays Morgan in the, you know, in the nose, and Meryl hits him.
Meryl smacks
him. And he drops him. Graham grabs him, takes him out, and pretty much starts to try to resuscitate him because...
He's got the EpiPen, man. He's got the EpiPen.
Yeah.
Hits him with the EpiPen.
Yeah, hits him with the EpiPen, and Morgan does die. He technically does die because he sprays him while he's sick. Graham and Bo go outside with Morgan, and they're trying to resuscitate him, trying to bring him back, and Meryl is just having a freak.
Meryl's beating the hell out of that alien.
I will say, while it is a cool scene because you obviously you get a confrontation with the alien, you finally get the moment of, you know, what this thing is here for. I wish it would have been a little bit better, like the scene itself. I love that he was just, like, hitting the crap. I wish the alien would have fought back, though. Because it's like the alien wasn't even trying to, like, engage.
No. And another thing that I thought that could have been more well done was the weakness itself. So in all the melee and everything, all of Bo's glasses are still half empty.
Oh, yeah, because Bo has that water thing.
Yeah, she has glasses. She has glasses everywhere.
Yeah.
So perchance in one of his swing bigs, he hits the glass and the water basically projects on the alien. And the alien starts to burn.
Yeah.
So now, you know, Meryl has the home field advantage.
Yeah.
He sees you, like, cringing with the water. And Bo has made sure this house is filled with freaking water.
Yeah.
So he just starts, like, going through and...
Hitting the
water glasses and splashing water onto the alien.
Yeah.
Now, back to the spiritual aspect of the movie. They have said that perhaps the reason that it burned was because, due to the fact that Graham was a holy man,
the water that was in his house
was holy water. Don't know. It's not been confirmed, but that's, like, the other side of the angle.
Yeah.
And this is a demon, and it's being attacked with the holy water.
And that's a good parallel, though.
Yeah.
You know, the aliens are afraid of water, and, you know, because it burns them, it hurts them. Demons do not like holy water because it burns them, it hurts them. you know, it's a very comparative line.
Yeah, which is great, because, like I said, there's two ways you can watch the movie.
Yeah.
So he's just knocking the water. So finally, but he's still going physical violence on
him. Yeah, he's still hitting the crap out of him. Dude, he breaks the Louisville Slugger on him.
Yeah, he so he wholly beats the alien down.
He literally beats the hell out of him.
He does. If it's a demon, it's beat. You know, so he hits it, and then there's water on top of the TV.
Yeah, so he knocks the crap out of the alien's face. Like, he hits the crap out of him, breaks the Louisville Slugger on him, knocks him into the TV or
the TV stand, yeah.
And it... You know, the glass shakes and it falls onto the alien's face.
And burns up his face.
And pretty much kills the alien. And, oh man, it's just, I mean, just the close-up on the alien, too. Even though it is CGI, it was still done really well. I mean, I get, you know, there's a lot of people that don't like CGI. They're more for practical. And I get that. But I think if CGI is done well, it's, you know, if it's done really well, I think it's good.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, this is 2002. CGI is starting to make a huge, you know, impact in cinema. So it's not the best, but this wasn't the worst.
But it was, I was going to say, it was done pretty doggone well. Because if you remember, not that far before that, you had Todd McFarlane's Spawn.
And oh, then, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Like, yeah. We don't want to get into that. I love Spawn.
I love Spawn too, yeah.
But yeah, it definitely was not the best CGI that was available.
No, but I do like the cape scene that movie. Oh, dude. Okay, anyways, but off topic. But yeah. So he goes outside and
they all gather around.
Yeah, and Bo is even said, like, I dreamt this. Oh, in the basement, she says that when he gets the asthma attack, and she's like, oh, I dreamt this. Like, my brother's going to die. Like, you know. But I don't think she meant that moment. I think what she meant was when he gets sprayed in the mouth by the gas. I think that's what she was talking, because he does die. And so finally, Graham, his faith kind of somewhat comes back. And he starts praying, and he's like, no. He goes, you know, his lungs were closed when that spray happened, when the gas went in. The gas didn't get in his lungs. He's fine. He's okay. And finally, Morgan comes back, and he asks Graham, you know, did someone save me? And Graham's like, yeah, someone did save you. But the whole thing is like, he's like, okay, my faith is back. Something did save my son. Like, somebody had to have saved my son. Like, it's not just, you know, it's supernatural, not, you know, nothing that I did, or, you know, it was something else. So that's, he gets his faith back.
And that was a great part about the end of the movie, too. It was like, this is obviously the end of the movie. And so after the scene out in the field, they go back inside the house. Kind of similar to the shot from The Presence.
Yeah.
And you look out the windows, and as you look out the windows, you see the seasons change.
Yeah, and it goes to snow.
It goes, like, you know, to obviously, like, you know, late fall, winter.
Yeah.
Middle of winter. And then, you know, Graham's character emerges from his bathroom.
And he's a reverend.
He's rejoined the flock, and, you know, he comes out fully dressed in his Sunday garb. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but, okay, another thing I will say. So, obviously, they found out water hurts them. But they also said, like, something scared them off. Like, that's what Morgan, or I think that's what Meryl says, that something scared them off. Like, something made them leave. Not just, like, the fighting with the water, but something else scared them off. Well, when it goes to winter, do you think that it was the snow? Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's my thing. The snow would have decimated them.
Yeah.
You know, worse than, you know, World War II.
Yeah.
The snow would have taken care of them. But I think really they probably did, like, maybe they did an analysis. 2/3 of this entire world's covered in water.
Yeah, and they're using water to kill us. Yeah, they have it in abundance.
Yeah, so. It's the dumbest, like, you know,
invasion ever. Yeah. So they pretty much, I don't think they even, a lot of people did die, but I don't think they ever said that anybody got taken, though. That, I mean, that they said in the movie. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like maybe it was the winter, not just winter, but probably other storms that happened too. Around the world, like, oh shoot, it comes out from the sky.
Well, shoot, man, think about the monsoon season in India.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so like, if you're attacking India, if that's like one of your main focal points, if it's like summertime, that's monsoon season.
Yeah. Not only that, in India there is that holy river.
Yeah, there's a river Ganges.
Yeah,
So
the Ganges River. Again, going back to different religions.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, that's the whole point. It's. Like I said, you can watch this movie in two ways, but yeah, obviously, you hit monsoon season, even if you're just an alien that's, you know, prone to be burned to death by water, monsoon season's going to take you out.
I mean, yeah, not only that, the storms, different storms, too, are gonna take them out, rainstorms and stuff like that, floods, everything is going to take them out, and I think that's what it was. It's like, dude, this is a losing battle. We are not going to be able to come back to this planet.
If they attack San Francisco, the fog kicks in. It's just like a light burn. It's not over. A horrible burn. It's just like, you know, like the beginning part of Blade where the sun's coming up, and you know.
Well, not only that, like say they, I mean, they attacked what? I mean, at from where Graham's at, they're in Pennsylvania. If they attacked down south with the humidity, wouldn't have that like burned their lungs? You know, breathing all that moisture in, and I think it would have just killed them no matter what. Like, they would have just died off no matter what.
On top of that, how are you going to attack us considering that basically, like, the minute that you puncture us, you're kind of like a bee. You're going to hurt yourself. So if you go through and, like, stab us, our blood has a certain obvious, you know, liquid content to it. You're going to start burning. So it's going to hurt you just as much to hurt me. How are you going to defeat an enemy like that?
And maybe that's what it was. Maybe that's why he didn't attack Meryl.
Yeah.
Like, it was just trying to scare him into backing down.
Yeah, maybe that's why they were just trying to take us and harvest us. Maybe they were trying to harvest maybe perhaps like a gene or an enzyme that we have that allows them, maybe there's something within our DNA that by studying and building upon, they could make themselves immune to being destroyed by the water.
Yeah.
But, man, it's signs, bro. There's a lot of signs in this movie. There's a lot of different ways to take it.
Yeah, so. But this was, it by far still is my favorite movie that M. Night Shyamalan's done. I mean, he has great ones. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diminish any other ones. I'm just saying, personally, I love Signs. It's just a great alien movie, man, in general, I think. I mean, there's great alien movies out there, but I think the way it was done from the perspective of the family and keeping the aliens hidden so well and just showing like silhouettes, body parts, stuff like that, the reveal happens, it's a huge reveal.
Yeah, you didn't have to go Independence Day where it's like there, yeah, like, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of took me back to the original Alien where, you know, obviously, like, you know, on the ship, you don't see the alien the whole entire time.
Yeah.
You know, it's very limited.
But I think with that, you know, it's futuristic. You know, it's set in space, so it's kind of, you know. But I think what this one does, it kind of gives it a real-world scenario, I guess you could say, where it puts it, like, you know, at your front door, pretty much. Whereas, you know, in space, you know, not everybody is going to travel, you know.
No one can hear you scream.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas, you know, putting it on your front door, you know, it gives it like, oh, man, that's kind of weird. So, me, I live down in the country.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Especially like rural, down home, apple pie America.
Yeah.
Like, you're in Pennsylvania on, like, you know, 100 acres.
Yeah.
Just minding your own business, you know. People screwing with your corn.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, I lived in front of a cotton field, so it's not the same. So I would have seen them, you know, unless they were like really short aliens.
Those little tiny ones pushing down the cotton.
Cotton circles right there. Yeah, look. Good.
Son of a biscuit. Looks like someone with a size 12 just went running through your field.
But yeah, man, I mean, It's a great movie. If you've never seen it, first of all, where you been at? But it's a great movie to check out. Set the mood. Darken the house.
Now, one thing I will say, and I think you notice this all, this movie is not free to stream anywhere.
No, it's not.
You know, you can either go buy, you know, a $4 used copy or, you know, I think Amazon had it for like $2.69.
Yeah, but it's a good copy to have. Yeah. Man. I mean,
it's a good movie because, like I said, if you rent it once, you're not going to be able to revisit it twice.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll definitely want to watch it from both angles.
Yeah. I will say this, though. So, growing up, my parents had it on VHS. That's how I would watch it, right, on VHS. And then, of course, us doing this episode, because, I mean, when we did the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter, I'm like, dude, I'm on a, like, alien roll. We need to do Signs. You know, after we did reviewed the monkey, I'm like, dude, we have to talk about Signs because, I mean, it's just a huge moment in my life.
They're hand in hand.
Yeah. And so I went to go buy my own copy. And the DVD version, when the main menu pops up, it's the baby monitor and the talking between the two aliens that before you get to the main menu. And, dude, just hearing that just, like, gave me goosebumps and it just gave me that feeling. I'm like, oh, dude, this is going to be another ride. It's going to be just like, you know, I thought because I'm older now, I'm like, it's not going to be the same feeling. No, it's still there. That feeling is still there, man. I still feel uneasy when I watch it. I still get goosebumps at certain scenes, like the reveal and seeing the alien on the rooftop. Like those moments, you know, the sounds of the aliens, like they still give me that feeling.
The other cool part about the DVD is the fact that if you look at the image, a cast silhouette is all three of the characters.
Yeah.
It's Meryl and the kids on the couch with the tinfoil hat.
Yeah.
which is great. I mean, it's also like, you know, you have your, you know, suspenseful, disturbing, you know, alien speak, and then it, you know, gives you that kind, you know, that comedic chagrin with the tinfoil hats and everyone on the couch.
So. Yeah, it's so good. But that was Signs, you know, by M. Night Shyamalan. Of course, he has great movies, but this is one of my favorites. So go check it out. But thank y'all so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please follow us on Instagram if y'all haven't. Link will be in the description of this episode. And yeah, guys, we'll see y'all.
See you next week.
Next week.